Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of that discussion about the offense against the Browns game. As bad as this discussion is, I had a lot of fun talking to Kevin Ostreicher in the first part about this, which if you haven't listened to already, please go back and do. A lot of stuff about Lamar and his opportunity set, a lot about how the Ravens are aligning their personnel, about missed opportunities on offense, about the usage of Zay Flowers, which I'm sure we're going to get into more in this episode, about the Ravens taking advantage of a tackling differential that they have versus the Browns. But Kevin, really appreciate talking football with you all the time, and welcome back.
Appreciate you having me back on, Ken. It's a tough discussion based off of how the game went, especially with some of the stuff we saw, particularly defensively, but also offensively, because I think there are certainly faults to be had on both sides. Obviously, defensively is going to take more of that blame as it should. But on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, one of the things that I know that we talked about in the first part is that offensive line, which certainly struggled against Cleveland's physicality up front and had a lot of different negative points in this game. So to me, when I looked at this offensive line, I saw a lot of quick pressure wins for Cleveland, which obviously kind of threw Lamar Jackson off, threw the offense off. But I mean, Ken, this group has a lot of powerful edge guys on Cleveland's defense, and I think we certainly got a first row seat to that on Sunday.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about part one about the opportunity set that Lamar had, that it was unusually poor. He still outproduced it, even with the, you know, a couple of the drops that occurred and whatnot. But, you know, and overall, the team had some penalties. They had two holding calls. They had a false start. That'll set you back plenty. They allowed three sacks, of which only one was on the offensive line as I scored it. Then they had, you know, a couple quarterback hits, a big slug of pressures in there that we'll get to on a by player basis, and generally just not very good grades across the board with one exception.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that we can talk about, because you know, you look at the offensive line here and what we have seen from them first couple weeks of the season. Obviously, they struggled quite a bit. Then we have seen the improvement, but in this game against a powerful Cleveland team, it wasn't really great. Now, you mentioned one exception, and we can start with that one exception here, because I think for me, Patrick McCary was somebody that there were a lot of, you know, not so great moments in this game. I thought Patrick McCary had the least amount of those in this game.
The least amount of not so great moments. Yes, I would agree with that. So I had him for three missed blocks only and one and a third pressures, which ain't bad at all. So 52 and a third points, 0.87 per play. If you adjust that, a B plus grade at guard. What was nice about this, had six level two blocks, where he did fail some as a run blocker. He was 0 for 2 on his pulls. There was a trip involved on one of the plays that I still am not sure if it was Jackson or Fa'alele who tripped him up pulling, but it happened. I think I've got that right. It might have been even Linderbaum who I'm thinking of that this happened to. But in any case, it's the sort of trip that we almost never saw in the Dallas Sanders era, where your footwork has been exceptionally good. Footwork starting at center is exceptionally good. But you have big linemen who are compressing the middle of the formation. That can still create such problems, and they were not immune to them in this game. But a good game for McCary. This makes three out of four good games for McCary. I would say he's got a very long leash right now on the hold. I haven't heard anybody talking about putting Andrew Vorhees back at left guard right now. I think there are some reasons why they might be wise to do it, to try and keep McCary as a reserve tackle. But then, Josh Jones.
Yeah, Josh Jones.
Josh Jones played well in his brief trial, and it maybe soothed me a little bit that it's okay to have McCary out there at left guard. He certainly outperformed Vorhees at this point, and with three of the last four games being good.
Yeah, and you know, hopefully no injuries for the Ravens on the offensive line moving forward. But if there was a guy who had to miss some time, it'd be curious to see if they would move McCary over there and then, you know, put Josh Jones in. I think that probably would be the course of action that they take because of McCary's versatility. But again, McCary was the least of the Ravens' worries on the offensive line on Sunday. I mean, we can just finish off the left side here, Ken, with Ronnie Stanley. it on the left tackle aspect of things. Definitely not the Ronnie Stanley game you would have hoped for in this game. Certainly contributed to some pressures on Lamar and some negative plays. You know, Ronnie's been great this season, and I think he's had a resurgent year. But on Sunday, he certainly had his fair share of struggles, in my opinion.
Yeah, very tough game. And anytime you fill up the entire column of potential things that can happen, it's a bad thing. So Ronnie Stanley in this game, just to read you the whole column, 60 plays, 48 blocks, 4 missed. He had half a penetration, which means he contributed to a loss on a run play. He gave up 1 plus 3 times a half, so shares of 4 different pressures. He gave up 2 full quarterback hits. He gave up half of a sack. He was flagged for offensive holding and a false start for another minus 7 points on that. Got 26 out of a possible 60 points, 0.43 per play. Even playing Myles Garrett, where I would normally give him a 0.10, the maximum possible adjustment for this, I had to take away from that because he also allowed Lamar to get pressured once where Lamar ran him out of it and it didn't make the pressure list here. Site like PFF will have it in their pressure list. I have to adjust for it separately in my system. So an F, about 10 points short of a D minus. It's not a fall off the table game, but it's also by far his worst game of the year. It's unfortunate. And it's the kind of thing in the old PFF system, you'd see something like a minus 6.5 or a minus 7. If you can remember what those grades used to look like for this game alone. And then you notice he has a bunch of other plus 2 and plus 1 games. And you'd be kind of frustrated by the fact that this one game, how could it be so bad? Well, this is how.
Yeah, just all across, not a great day for Ronnie Stanley. And again, he's been so good this season. I don't want to take away from what he's been able to do up to this point. But of course, we're going to have to talk about the bad in this game because he was a big reason why the Ravens' offensive line struggled. Tyler Linderbaum, Ken, I thought was okay. I mean, not his best game, but again, not the biggest reason why the Ravens' offensive line struggled.
Right. So Linderbaum had a holding call, and anytime a particular get a holding call at any position, but a holding call at center or guard in particular, because the grading scale is tougher, makes it worse at those positions. It's a worse error in a relative sense. But he also missed 6 blocks. That's not to be trivialized. That's 10% of his points he lost from that. Allowed half a penetration. And that holding call, of course, stalled a drive. So that's bad when it wouldn't matter if it had stalled a drive or not. But in this case, it stalled a drive, and you can see why it ought to be a very bad score. Anyway, 0.78 for the game, which doesn't sound terrible except at center. Even with his adjustment, that's only a C-. What I'll say is good about this game is I thought all of the guys got out in level 2 and were making blocks well. I didn't talk about Stanley in this, but he had 6 level 2 blocks. Linderbaum had 8. Linderbaum only made 2 of his 4 pulls. And that's why I was looking at the 2 totals here. I'm trying to figure out who got tripped up, but it might've been Linderbaum. It doesn't matter. What the point is that they don't have the kind of focus on footwork, I don't believe, with Warhop that they did with D'Alessandris. I think he was just very much a master of it. And I'm watching some of the 2005 Ravens trying to work my way back through all the seasons of offensive line scoring. And they're having just all kinds of trouble with Mike Flynn, well-known Raven, thought to be a very good Raven, but all kinds of footwork problems. Kedrick Vincent is a nightmare in terms of tripping up the quarterback and tripping up the pulling players. It's a completely different offensive line to watch. I'll just say that.
Yeah, it is. And again, I think that they have improved since the first couple of weeks, but this is one of the struggles they've had was against this Cleveland. Very good. I want to make that clear. Very good defensive line there. Going, just continuing from left to right now, Daniel Faalele, Ken, not impressed. Rough game for Daniel Faalele. And again, while Ronnie Stanley had a pretty poor game, Daniel Faalele certainly in that conversation too, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. And they targeted him a lot, a lot of TE stunts on that side, or TE twists on that side with attempts to get Za'Darius Smith by him. And Smith proved to be way too quick for him. He wasn't the only one. But Faalele, 60 plays, 49 blocks. He missed 5, had half a penetration allowed on a run play, and 4 pressures, and that's actually 3 plus 2 times a half. So it's parts of 5 pressures if you want to look at it that way. 0.67 in terms of a raw score. He also got run out of a pressure by Lamar that didn't count in there, so he got a very minimal adjustment that pulled him up to a D, and he's actually at the very bottom end of the D range where he is. So it's just nothing good to look at. I guess if you wanted to find something, he made 3 out of 4 blocks when he was pulling. He was about 1 for 4 in level 2. So he made one block, but he also had 3, I think, L2 NBs. Might have been 4 even, but it's definitely 3 at least. So that was unfortunate. So had a great pass blocking game 2 weeks ago. You really had hoped he would continue with showing improvement in more than one category, because as I've been describing, he's been kind of playing a whack-a-mole game with all his weaknesses. He had one game where he made 11 level 2 blocks. And you think, oh, well, this is good. Maybe he's got some of his decisiveness issues fixing level 2. And then that went all to hell. And then he had a great pass blocking game. And that's the most important thing you can do. And you think maybe he's turning the corner. And then he has a game like this again, where most of the problems are pass blocking. And it just, he's got to start putting multiple elements together. I think he still has some leash to go. I don't think they're close to replacing him right now at right guard. If I'm wrong about that, I'll probably be pleasantly surprised, but I think he's probably got, I would think, at least 2 more games of play at this level before they get rid of him. And I'm basing that on the fact they went down the stretch with Simpson having like 7 consecutive D games last year, largely driven by penalties.
Right. And I think they're committed to him at this point. I mean, he had shown improvement, but obviously from a guard perspective, still pretty inexperienced. And we saw in a game against a very experienced Browns defensive line, look, it gave him all sorts of trouble. So, you know, we can talk about if Ben Cleveland is the answer, or talk about if another guy should get that opportunity, move McCary around and see what that all looks like. But for now, at least, Daniel Falele is still going to be that guy, it appears. Roger Rosengarten, Ken, I thought that he was decent, not spectacular. You know, honestly, for him, a guy that, you know, has been a very good surprise on this Ravens offensive line for a rookie. And in this game, while you certainly had bad performances across the board, Rosengarten, not one of them.
Yeah, I completely agree. And whenever you have a rookie who starts off at a C level, and that's where Linderbaum was as a rookie, he was a C-plus level center. And we don't have to get into all the reasons why that got inflated by PFF and whatnot, but his pass blocking was poor. His run blocking was good. They averaged that out with their 85-15 formula with something that was, you know, absurdly high for what he was, but he had a good C plus year as a rookie. And then people were kind of robbed of how much an improvement he made in year 2, particularly as a pass blocker, and how much of a difference that made his play. With Rosengarten, he's starting off at a very good level. You know, he's a solid C plus, right tackle. I think everything is still on the table for 2025, including a move to left tackle. If the Ravens are in a position where Ronnie Stanley walks, or they don't have another way to fix that. Not everything has been perfect by any stretch. This game was one where he gave up a bunch of pressures to Zadarius Smith, a total of 6 pressure events that he was involved in. It was a bunch of partials, 1 full pressure, 3 half pressures, 1 1-third pressure, and 1 half sack. So it's a lot of pressure he shared with some other player. But nonetheless, it was not, not good. It works out to 0.69 with an adjustment. And it's a fairly high adjustment because he's playing at Zadarius Smith, but it wouldn't have mattered. Even a moderate adjustment would have gotten him up to the C level. Solid. Not spectacular. If we could sign up for this for Roger Rosengarten for the rest of the season, the level of play in this game specifically, I'd probably do it. I'd really like it if it were a few points higher and it was a C-plus instead of a C, but I would probably sign up for this for the rest of the season right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's done admirably for a rookie coming in, and obviously didn't necessarily start the year, but earned his opportunity and has kind of run with it. So while it hasn't been a perfect year for Roger Rosengarten, I think that they're getting a lot out of him that they've needed at that right tackle position. Now, offensive line, Ken, that's one conversation, but you got some other skill position players in here as well. That
pick one you'd like to talk about, and we'll talk about that.
I think, who do I want to go? There are so many. I'm going to start with Zay. Zay had the game, obviously, 7 catches of over 100 yards. He's picking his spots so well. He's a devastating route runner. I know we talked about some of this in the first episode that we did, where he needs to get help put his way. And I remember Peter King went out there last offseason when Zay was a rookie to Ravens. I think it was training camp, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And he wrote in his column, he said, the only way that teams are going to stop Zay Flowers is if you physically tackle him to the ground or you hold him. That's just how good he was, how electric he is. And year two, he's finding his spots better. He and Lamar have a better connection than they had his rookie season. And in this game, especially when the Browns started losing guys defensively, you know, Denzel Ward leaves, and Denzel Ward's had a heck of a year so far. And, you know, Greg Newsome has struggled this season. You know, they Martin Emerson had to leave the game for a little bit while he got evaluated. Cleveland was getting thin, and Zay Flowers took advantage, especially finding soft spots in the defense, but also creating spots. He created a lot of his yards and his opportunities with how sudden he is with his movements. And to me, Ken, I thought Zay was phenomenal.
Yeah, it's suddenness is really the thing. I mean, I still go back to this. I don't think Zay is a great route runner, but it doesn't, you know, Bateman is a great route runner because he throws wiggle at the opponent at the top of the route, and then he breaks off that. And that's why his separation numbers are exaggerated relative to Zay's speed. But Zay is so sudden that, you know, he's what makes him so great versus zone defense in particular. But it also it's good against man too, especially if they're only playing, you know, playing the receivers on in man coverage with a single high somewhere in between, who has no chance to make a play on either. Really, it's nice that he can just put his foot in the ground and go, and immediately there's a lot of separation and really nothing a defensive back can do about it at that point. What I thought was great about this game was Zay Flowers had an ADOT of 17.3. Now I want to read you his ADOTs the rest of the year. So week one, 4.6, then 10.8, then 0.5. You can see the amount of gadgetry that's being used here. Then 11.0, 10.7, 5.2, minus 2.0. He only had one target versus the Bucs. And then 17.3 in this game. So they threw the ball over 200. And we mentioned this on the first show, but that's 12 targets. I mean, this is most targets he's had all year, and he's got the highest ADOT also. It's probably most of his total yards in the air for the year were in this game, or a high percentage of it anyway. Really nice to see him used that way. And I hope the acquisition of Deontay Johnson allows him to shed more of the gadget role, of the close to the line of scrimmage role, because boy, he's a real weapon when you have him downfield and you're forcing to make a safety, to make a choice between two routes that he's going to try and help on.
Essentially, if you use Zay, or I guess I should say, if you overuse Zay in a gadget role, it takes away so much of that. And I think, again, it's better than what we saw from Todd Monken in the first part of last year, because he was just spamming all these Zay, you know, trickeration plays, and where it's like, all right, you can tone it down. You know, they were working him too much horizontally when they needed to work him vertically. It's been better. But if you have the threat of, let's say, a Deontay Johnson moving across the field, and all of a sudden you have to worry about that. Oh, and there's Zay, and he can run any number of routes with his suddenness and fluidity. That, to me, puts more stress on a defense than the threat of Zay with trickeration himself.
Great stuff. Let's move on and talk about Rashad Bateman here. I think he deserves a discussion. Obviously, a couple drops in this game, which was unfortunate. The passer rating throwing to him this year is 127.4 when I use the PFF targets, which, by the way, I think understates his targets by two, because he had five in this game. A couple of them were thrown out of bounds, but that oftentimes means that the player isn't open and the quarterback has to do that. But anyway, 35 targets this year for 422 yards. Let's just do that real quickly, because I think it's 12.1. 12.1 yards per target, which is fifth in the entire NFL right now. He was leading the entire NFL last week with a minimum of four targets per game. It's remarkable who this guy is in terms of a difference maker relative to last year. Slight off performance here. Obviously, the sun is what it is. The one thing I would have liked to see happen after that play is just him tap his chest after the play instead of pointing up to the sun. I really kind of wish he hadn't done that. I just don't like that. The easiest thing you're always taught as an executive to do is basically just say, you know, it's my fault. Let's see if we can correct this from here. And if he'd done that, you know, I think it would have been the easiest thing to accept. You can tell Lamar on the sideline, hey, look, I'm really sorry about that. I should have had it, but I lost it in the sun. It was coming right through that panel up there. And he could tell Lamar what he wants on the sideline, but I don't think there's any reason to put it out there on TV.
Yeah, and you know, that happens. Like, balls get lost in the sun. Like, all sports, you know, baseball, football, whatever. Like, it happens. But I think in that situation, it was such a big play, and he knew it. I think at that point, he's like, oh, man, what's going to happen here? So, you know, I think maybe the gut reaction was to say, all right, let me try to illustrate to everybody what happened. Where, you know, for a contrast, I guess, and again, we're not saying that Rashad's like a bad dude or anything, or like takes no account. Like, we're not saying that, obviously, right? But for example, Lamar is always on the like, hey, that's my bad. Yep. Like every time, you know, regardless of if it's his fault or not, it's, well, I have to play better. It's my fault. This, you know, defense loses in a game, I have to be better. You know, X does something wrong, he doesn't do it, I have to be better. So yeah, I think for Rashad, he understood he messed up. He understood that it's his thing, but an off game on an otherwise, well, in an otherwise very, very good season for Rashad Bateman. It's been night and day for him.
Yeah, but it's exciting now that he's signed for 3 years under the contract he's got now. Ravens are going to get real value out of this. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason why he should be losing snaps to Deontay Johnson. I'll just say that right off the bat here. I mean, if you want to take some of Aguilar's snaps and give them out, that's fine. If you even think the Ravens should play a little less 11 personnel, I hope they play. Sorry, if they should play more 11 personnel, I hope they actually play more heavies because it means they're winning. But if this is the way they're going to win ball games, if it's going to be a shootout every damn week and they have to play as much 11 as they did this week, then that will create some opportunities for Deontay Johnson. But they don't need. I mean, Flowers and Bateman are head and shoulders above Johnson as a receiver, and there really should not be any need to take snaps away from either of them.
Right. They don't have to, or they should not get cute with this. Like, obviously you bring in Deontay Johnson for a reason. You want to get him snaps. You want to get him opportunities, but don't get him snaps and opportunities at the expense of the guys that have gotten you this far and the guys that have proven that they could, you know, Ken, if there's an alternate universe out there where, you know, Rashad struggled this year, or, you know, there was an injury or something like that, he just wasn't playing the way that he was for the most part. You make an argument, one, Deontay plays more, or two, they go get a better receiver than Deontay and plug him in. But Rashad's playing great. Zay is playing great. You don't want to abandon your heavy sets. You don't, again, we talked about it in the first episode. You don't want him out there as a blocker. You'd rather have someone else who has that skill set. So don't get too cute with it. He has a role, but it's a role that does not encapsulate him playing, you know, 75% of the snaps on this offense.
Right. Right. Now, I think we'll see less than that. All right. Very good. Who's your next guy? Who would you like to talk about?
I'm going to go Mark Andrews. I think for Andrews, obviously, slow start to the season. We saw teams definitely keying on him, especially in that Kansas City game to open up the year. 5 for 36 in this game, caught all five of his targets, had that touchdown also. You know, seems like he is now getting back on track. And I do think part of that is there are just too many people on the Ravens offense to defend in general. And you got to essentially, it's that pick your poison offense. But Mark was never like washed in my, like, I think there was that narrative because, again, the targets weren't there. And we have been so used to in Baltimore seeing Mark get 10 to 12 targets a game and, you know, have 8 to 9 catches and be the focal point of the offense. Where this year, Lamar is spreading the ball around. But Mark has been awesome as a blocker for the most part this season, at least night and day from what he was coming out of college. I mean, he's been, he's just improved that tremendously, and he's fitting into a role. And I think it's a really good thing he's bought into it the way that he has, because some guys can struggle with the, oh, hey, I'm the focal point of this group, to now, well, I'm still part of the offense, but, you know, targets kind of gone down. I think Mark is, at least from what I can see, is bought into it. And I think that will benefit him for the majority of the rest of the year.
Right. I would agree. And, you know, in a lot of ways, this could be a contract year for Andrews. He could be a guy, you know, if you really wanted to, that the Ravens could trade here at the deadline and try and get something for, if they really wanted to disrupt things. I don't think they want to. I think they want to play out the season with him. I think, you know, in a lot of ways, it'd be a shame if Andrews loses a really good opportunity to get a ring. But at the end of this year, they're going to have to make some tough decisions. It doesn't have anything to do with Mark Andrews. It's more about all the other players they have to sign and the fact that they have Isaiah Likely, which is going to help, you know, put the red carpet out the door for him, I'm afraid. It's a sad situation, but you know, he's played well. What's good is we weren't 100% sure he'd come back from the injury. He looked fine in camp. You still never know from that. Obviously didn't play in the preseason, so it's a non-contact camp he's playing in. Look great running around the field, look great leaping up for the ball, looks still like the guy that Jackson wants to get the ball to. But, you know, during the season, things have been good, but not great. I mean, obviously, he's covered in week one and has had some limited production otherwise. But I think he's coming back, and we're seeing the high value catches show up again. And the box out for the touchdown was a thing of beauty there. It was a much needed catch, and he knew just how to do it like a great rebounder.
Yeah. And to me, I think that's where, you know, we always talk about with Mark, for in particular, his ability with him and Lamar to play street ball. And I think that has rubbed off on a lot of different people on this team, to where it feels like most, if not all, of these guys can now play street ball with Lamar the way that Mark and Lamar have for so many different seasons. And so, you know, I know you mentioned it with kind of like the future of Mark, where I don't think there's any world where they can keep both Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews. They're going to have to make a decision. And obviously, for a lot of people, it comes down to, do you keep the experience in Mark for an older player who is obviously, you know, a guy that is getting older with every season, or do you sign Isaiah Likely the extension and do you get some level of value for Mark Andrews at that point? Obviously, it's a tough decision, but for the Ravens having Mark Andrews now with Isaiah Likely, you got to capitalize on it because it's one of the reasons why this offense is so good.
He's under 3.5 targets per game this year. Last year, he had 6 targets per game, which was certainly a healthy number. And he was back up at 8.9 yards per target. And he's been as high as 153 targets in 21 plus 113 in 22. That was not healthy in particular. I think that the 21 and 22 seasons, Lamar really leaned on him too much as a go-to contested catch guy, and end up resulting in a lot of interceptions. So if you look at the passer rating throwing to him, it dropped pretty precipitously over those years until last year, when it improved again to about 135, when all the tight ends are getting fewer targets. You know, Monken is doing a better job of creating space for wide receivers to operate and getting opportunities for them. And it's a more healthy way to operate the offense is just, you do that. Even this year, when we talked at the big topic, the whole offseason was, how much can you get these guys on the field together? And the answer until this game really had been very little. But in this game, they got on the field a fair amount together. Now, I've got to look at my thing here. What percentage? Yeah, they played combined 143% of the snaps, which means they're probably on the field together for about 43% of the snaps. Now, they're going to probably be some plays somewhere where neither Andrews nor Likely was on, but I don't think there were very many of them. I think it's more likely you have two of them on the field at the same time. And I think this is the most that it's been the entire season, because a lot of times it's been one guy's been in the 40s, another guy's been around 65 or 70, and you end up with, you know, just a little more than 1.0 snaps per for the two of them combined.
Right. And to me, I think that, you know, part of the reason why Baltimore's offense has been so effective this season is he can use so many different guys and so many different personnel packages. And within those sets, you have 5 to 7 different things that can happen on any single one of those plays. And so whether it's Mark or Likely, or, you know, you want to throw in Charlie Kohler in that equation, or, you know, Zay Flowers, or any of these guys, anybody can make a play. Whereas before, it's okay, Mark is down there somewhere, let's just throw that ball up and see if he comes down with it. And then you have maybe a sprinkle of Marquise Brown back when he was in Baltimore as Zay Flowers on the side. It's now everybody makes a play. And I think that makes Baltimore's offense super, super lethal, as we've seen so far.
All right. You brought up Andrews. Let me bring up another guy, and it won't be a long discussion here, but Tez Walker. Now, if anyone right now is kind of sulking over the Diontae Johnson acquisition, I mean, there's probably some people who, you know, think that, you know, why are we bothering this? Why are we not directly addressing, you know, what's wrong with the team? There's going to be some people like that. You can maybe count me in that group too, if you want to, but the Tez Walker is lost ground with this. He's slipped on the totem pole. Tylan Wallace, maybe a little bit too, because he had return duties that he may lose to Diontae Johnson. And he also has wide receiver snaps he's probably going to lose as well. But Tez Walker is the guy. I mean, he has not shown up yet off on the offensive side, though he's been active now 2 weeks in a row. Played 11 special team snaps in the first game. I didn't actually check to see how many he played this game. Did you happen to see it?
I didn't see it, no.
All right, going right now. So Walker played Yeah, 23 special team snaps in this game. So that's an expanded special teams role. That's good. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
But didn't get in on the offensive side, of course, he's now I'm afraid he may be ticketed for IR fairly soon, so yeah. We'll see how that works out.
Yeah, and I think again you kind of see Deontay Hardy going injured reserve, and you say, okay, well, hey, maybe Tez will get some level of a shot here. Mm-hmm. This could expand his role there, but yeah, Deontay coming in certainly puts a pin in that for, you know, who knows, maybe the season like you mentioned, but. At this point, you know, Tez, I know everybody talks about with bigger bodied receivers. Oh, well, they, you know, they have that guy with Mark Andrews or Isaiah Likely. But in the wide receiver room, mm-hmm. that is Tez Walker. And again, Deontay is not that guy. Deontay's 5'10". You know, he's not that bigger bodied player. Sure, he can go up there and make a contested catch, but, you know, he doesn't have that frame that, you know, for example, a guy like Cortland Sutton has over there in Denver. So, again, he has the skill set, but clearly they don't believe he's ready yet, and so they will move forward, it looks like, with their bigger body players still being in their tight end room.
Yeah. Yeah. Ted Walker is 6'1", and I forget if Bateman is 6'1" or 6'0", but he's one of the two.
Yeah.
Might be 6'1". So they've got a couple of guys who are of that same ilk, but Walker actually a very thin-framed guy. He's 6'1", 190-something, and he, of all the guys who plays maybe a little bit lighter frame than you would think, Walker got pushed around and frankly beaten up a little bit, I want to say, and without being mean about it, during the preseason. Number 45, Christian something or other.
Oh, Matthew.
Yeah, it is Christian Matthew, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Not Matthew Christian, right? Christian Matthew?
No, I think it's Christian Matthew.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He took his helmet off like a couple times during one practice. And you know, you're like, why are they being so physical and whatnot? But often is the case when you're a little bit further down, you got players who are really trying to make an impression. They're more physical than they need to be. And he saw some of that, you know, Tez was on the receiving end of some of that and it held him out of practice some. So we'll see how this works out for him. I'm still optimistic he can be a valuable player for the Ravens, but it just may not be this year. And we've seen other guys come through, Tylan Wallace, Chris Moore. They ended up having a marginal receiving contribution, but a fantastic special teams contribution. It's not impossible. That's what Tez Walker ends up as.
And that's not a bad career. It's not a bad career.
You can make some money doing that.
Yeah. Solid career. So regardless of how it works, I mean, look, it's probably not going to amount to anything this season. Maybe again, that increased special teams role. But on the offensive side of the ball, yeah, they're definitely rolling with other guys right now, and, you know, as they should. For me, I'm looking through. We can have the Derrick Henry conversation now. I feel like, because obviously one of the big things, I know we talked about it in the first part of this, Ken, was Derrick Henry only getting 11 carries in this game. Did have a touchdown, and again, has scored a touchdown in every game for the Ravens so far this season. Not using him a ton as a receiver. That was one of the things you could use him a little bit, you know, but when he came over from Tennessee, I thought, okay, this is something where you can maybe see screens incorporated. And they've done that a couple of times, but not necessarily with the emergence of Justice Hill, which I'm sure we're going to talk about a little later. They haven't had as much of a need for some of that, but we talked about the game flow, talked about the game script, kind of how this game went. And again, you maybe could find, okay, could he have had 15 carries in this game? Possibly. But I think it's pretty on par for what this game ended up dictating for the running game for the Ravens, with especially what the Browns showed on defense.
Right. And the Ravens, obviously, they weren't in there in heavy personnel the whole time. So when they're showing you the little bit lighter box with seven, you don't necessarily have Ricard in there for a good point of attack block on there. So it's not even as good an opportunity as it could be. You know, Henry played perfectly fine in this game. There's no big negative I have. I still say, and I think Henry dropped off a little bit in terms of success rate in this game, meaning how often is he getting the football outsiders point of view. So I want to see where he is for the season right now, but he's still at 55.2% through the game. That's off. He might've been 55.8 going into this game. So it gives you an idea of probably maybe had four successes or something out of 11 carries. That's still exceptionally good. And when we looked at this, he'd been 46% on average, by the way, the last 3 years combined in Tennessee, and he's at 55.2, which you'd expect an increase from Jackson. I said a good year, which is a 60th percentile year, would be about a 51% success rate, and a great year would be 53%. He's exceeding that. And I think it's fair to say people have probably some trouble doing this, but I know we have a big STEM audience out there. Just think about for a second. You can add it to comments. You can toss it back to me in a comment on Twitter, whatever you want. What percentile is Henry's year this year of what your expectation was at the beginning? If you'd have laid out all the possible options, is Henry having a, you know, I would say he's probably having a 95th or higher percentile year right now based on where my expectations were. Now, a whole lot of other people thought, oh, he's going to be incredible, and you see this. But then we see that for every offensive player who comes in, is that people, Lee Evans, going to get 1,400 yards. You know, Anquan Boldin is going to get 1,300 yards. And, you know, it doesn't happen. Where are you on that?
Yeah, I was going to say right around 95, 96 in terms of percentiles. I mean, I saw areas, especially when he was first signed, where I'm like, all right, this can really work in a lot of different ways. Now, did I expect it to be at this point right now, less than halfway through the year? I maybe expected to take a little more time than it did, especially because, again, like we were talking, he was having a great year. First, you know, second week of the season, third week of the season. First week, they are still trying to figure some stuff out. But, you know, to get to week four, he has essentially 200 yards, 199 to be exact. But the thing that, and this is kind of stuff that was talked about, is, you know, you have the threat of Lamar and Derrick Henry in the backfield. Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins were perfectly fine as members of the Ravens, and they did great things, but they're not Derrick Henry. And that's just sometimes what it comes down to, where, you know, you can have a really mobile quarterback in some aspects, and they can make you miss and do that in the other. But then you play Lamar Jackson, and the other guy is not Lamar Jackson. Right. And that's kind of it is. So I kind of chalk it up. Can I use the word gravity a lot? Just because, and that's one of the reasons, you know, we talked about that fourth and one play with Lamar out wide and Derrick Henry in the wildcat. You lose your gravity with that. We're like, even if, look, the thing about being Lamar Jackson is you're Lamar Jackson. And with that, as a defense, you have to account for him, whether he has the ball or not. But when you take that element out, Derrick Henry has gravity himself. But at that point, you're like, okay, well, this is up. The only other thing I could have really thought, Ken, is if they did that jump pass that he's been known
for. Throw the ball, exactly, yep.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I'm like, that's the only other thing. But if I'm Cleveland, I'm selling out to stop him. I don't care about the jump pass.
They didn't get Lamar covered until the very end there. If you look at that, whoever ran over to cover Lamar, he was very late to get there. If Henry had snapped that ball, he could have gotten the ball out there. And it would have been a bad play to miss on if he had decided to throw it, because it wasn't really set up for a run, obviously, not as well as it could. The other thing about that play, Ronnie Stanley was on the right side of that formation. Yep. They ran unbalanced right, and Ronnie Stanley actually had his half penetration on that play, which was really costly. It's not the good place to have your one mistake of the game and in the well, one of the mistakes of the game in the run game.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Derek's been great this season. And again, he's just added an extra element to this group that, you know, really you can't replicate unless you have Derrick Henry on your team.
So two more things about Henry, and then I'll transition into Hill for you and hear your thoughts. But Henry is on the field for 35 snaps and Hill 34 in this game. Henry got the ball 12 times, 11 carries, one pass reception. Hill only got a 3 out of 34. And they've been really doing obviously they use Hill as a blocker a lot. And I have that number right here. Yep. So Hill in this game, which I've got a theory on this, was used 10 times, 5 times as a set blocker, 5 times as a chip blocker. It wasn't a really great game for him as a pass blocker, by the way. He gave up a portion of a sack. I mean, there were problems in this game. There's some, give a sack to the other 43, Diabate.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point being that they're really relying on him very heavily as a pass blocker, whereas Henry, he was in there. Henry had actually 4 set blocks in this game and 1 chip, which is high for him. That's a lot of times that he's been used as a blocker. But, you know, I think if you just look at the relative snaps of the two and you say, oh, why is Henry only in the game for 35 snaps? No wonder they only ran him 11 times. It's been like this pretty much every game that Henry is a designated ball toucher when he's in the game, kind of the way Mark Andrews in his rookie year and second year was a designated receiver when he was in the game.
Yeah, and they're playing to skill sets, and I think that's fine, especially because Justice over the course of the season, if you're talking about Justice Hill, has been a really good pass protector. And that's kind of been his thing where, you know, in this game, Justice has played so well this season. This was not the Justice Hill game. I mean, he had the 1 catch for 14 yards, and that was big, but you mentioned it only had 3 total touches of the football in his 30-plus snaps. So the split has been, again, and I think it was kind of foreshadowing when John Harbaugh ended up saying, okay, Derrick Henry's not coming in to, you know, run the ball 30 times a game, which is correct. He should not be running the ball 30 times a game. But in that does come the, okay, well, Justice Hill is playing really well. You're going to use him in spots. Keaton Mitchell is coming back probably not the next couple of weeks, probably 3 weeks.
He's going to miss 2 more games that I predict anyway. That he'll be back for the Pittsburgh game, which that'll be good.
Yeah, that'll be fun. So, but again, what does that look like? Does he eat into Derrick Henry snaps? Does he eat into Justice Hill snaps? That's something.
What do you want it to look like? We got time. What do you want it to look like?
I think, again, it's kind of the split of like, maybe it eats into 1 or 2 of Derrick Henry's carries, but you want Derrick to be the focal point, not to lose that. I think if anything, it will eat into Justice's carries. And I think that what I'm interested to see is, do they use him as a receiver? And is that the area where maybe Justice on third down, depending on the situation, obviously if one of them for pass blocking, you know, pass protection, sure. But do they use him? Do they set up screens for him? Do they put him and send him in the flat and see what he can do on certain screen passes or whatnot? So I think to me, Derek being the quote unquote bell cow, but then I don't want to say it. I think Keaton will be the third back because I'm not sure what to expect from Keaton this year, first year off the injury. I think we're going to see Keaton be Keaton next year. But I still think even if he's not 100% himself or he looks a little off compared to what we saw his rookie season, he can still give you something because he has that element to him. But I'm just not expecting him to just pick up right where he left off. I think for a lot of these guys who go through injuries like this, it's a lot more of a process before they're back to their full selves.
Okay, so I've got a prediction. I think he's going to take snaps from Deontay Johnson, or maybe that means from Aguilar as it's been constituted so far. Because what I'd see him as being the most obvious gadget guy on the team.
For sure.
If he's got most of his speed anyway back. And again, you're right. We don't know exactly what to expect from Keaton. But if he can get back on the field and be fast, then he adds a huge misdirection component to the offense. I think you set him out to the outside as a flanker. You bring him back through the formation and you use him for some of the jet toss stuff you've used Flowers for, jet toss, jet sweep, both. And I think he can make some plays for you. It's some home runs for you that way. And there's no reason why he should not be in the backfield for some plays. He was so damn good last year. Although I don't think this offensive line right now is going to be quite as good at making second level opportunities for Mitchell to get free and make people miss like crazy. It's not as well constituted as it was with having Zeitler and Moses on that right side, which is unfortunate, but it's where the team is right now. In most ways, it's probably going to be a lost year for him. But right now, the Ravens haven't had a single snap from RB3. So I think Mitchell comes back, maybe returns some kicks too, by the way. Maybe he's part of their kickoff return team. And we'll see some fun stuff out of him. I don't care if it's only 5 to 8 snaps per game. I'm still excited to see it. And I was excited to see it last year when it finally started happening. And then, you know, all of a sudden you have this monster in your backfield. And before you knew it was over, and he's lost, and he's not going to participate in the postseason. The Super Bowl hopes took a big hit. It sucked.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy he's going to be able to come back and do his thing. Now, again, how much of himself will he be coming off the injury? Who knows? But regardless, it's another element, and teams have to respect the speed, if anything. So, I mean, it's going to be exciting to see him back in the fold for sure.
All right, how about we go to the mailbag for a few questions here? We've got a few, and they're interesting. If you want to head over to hashtag Film Study Mailbag on your tweet deck there or on Twitter, I'll point to the first one, and you can pick up another question if you like the look of that. But Brad McGowan sends to us, hey, Ken, Faulele's poorer performances the last couple of games have me wondering if his better prior performances have more to do with opponents not actually attacking him and were less about him actually improving. Thoughts? Go ahead.
I think to me, it's a little of both here, where what did we see against Dallas? It was 3 straight dropbacks, and against Buffalo, I can't remember the exact numbers, but part of it is he's still developing. And I think he has improved. Like, I think Faulele has improved over the course of the season, but he's not this like all pro player. And I think when we see a lot of this, as I mentioned, it's different blocking for Lamar compared to any other quarterback. And Lamar makes offensive lines sometimes look better than they actually are because of his ability to escape. And that's why, again, when you mention like sack rate and stuff, like it's lower because Lamar just evades so many of them, especially when he gets out into space. So I think Faulele, he has improved, but I also think Lamar being back there certainly helps a lot of these guys. And just, I mean, I think one of the big things, I remember, and it's a name that not a lot of people want to talk about, but Alejandro Villanueva, when he came over, was talking about how it's different blocking for Lamar as opposed to at that time it was Ben. And that was kind of like the old Ben, you know, wasn't really super mobile. And he said that it's so different blocking for Lamar versus Ben, or honestly blocking for Lamar versus anybody, because of just how Lamar can make things happen. And obviously I think that helps everybody. And I think it's helped Faulele this year too.
Yeah, I do. I'm looking at it now. It's been 3 out of 4 games now he's been at a D level or lower. He had 1 F, 2 Ds, and then he had an A though in the game against Washington where he had the great pass blocking game. I might be overstating the leash he's got. I think he's got 2 more games. I don't know. I don't know how long they're going to put up with it. I don't know if they're going to put up with it for a lot longer than that. At some point, I think Ben Cleveland probably does have to get a chance if Faulele's not cutting it. Cause he's played, I mean, he's just played better than this for stretches in his career before. So, you know, the only thing I'm hesitant to say, because I know I'm looking, his actual play on the field is relatively small in terms of total snaps. I mean, you know, several hundred for his career. It's just been at a significantly higher level than what Faulele has done. And Harbaugh has all of the other considerations in terms of work ethic and in terms of being on time for practice, really showing a love for football, being physical at practice instead of kind of half-assing it. You know, whatever the problems may be with Cleveland that have made him not be part of the regular thing, I fully admit I don't know them, but I can. I do feel confident in my ability to evaluate their on-play quality of both these players. And you know, Cleveland is just ahead of Faulele at this point. So there are other reasons. I mean, they get Faulele for next year, so there's an advantage to that. On the other hand, they might get a comp pick if Cleveland were to play well for the remainder of this year. They might also at this point be able to sign him cheap. You know, if people were to play 2 games and play at a, you know, B level, let's say, and the Ravens, you know, go to Cleveland and say, hey, well, you want to sign for 3 years, $9 million or something. Maybe, you know, maybe that's something that works out. I mean, if I don't think the single year option value on Falele is high enough to be the thing that keeps Cleveland off the field. But Harbaugh's got his reasons, and I have to respect them because I'm not privy to what else is going on. All right, let's see if we can get one more question here, and then we'll call it a night. What do we got here? That was from Brad. Okay, there's a D-line question. Okay, here's a good one for you, Cole. Now, this is really interesting. Does the Johnson acquisition now make Bateman, having a career year with a good contract, tradable for defensive help this year? It's from you, Cole. Really appreciate the question.
Yeah, I personally say no to this. I don't think that if you're the Ravens, you want to make that move. There are multiple reasons why my answer is no. The one that I will point to the most is, one, Bateman has shown a lot of growth this season. Two, I'm going to say this, that contract is the best contract in football.
Fantastic. Yep.
Best contract in football. I mean, obviously the fifth-year option dilemma cost him probably a lot of money here, and that's unfortunate for him. But for the Ravens side of things, what is it, 3 years, 15, 16 mil, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken there? I mean, in a wide receiver market that what saw Gabe Davis get 18 mil per season or whatever it was. I think Darnell Mooney Gabe Davis got like 13. Darnell Mooney got 13 million. Like, we are seeing Rashad Bateman on this contract for $5 million per season. I mean, that contract alone is super valuable. And the fact that he is showing growth and improvement, the Deontay Johnson move should not, you know, push Bateman out. I don't think it should really affect Bateman all that much in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, not at all.
Because, you know, he is playing so well, obviously outside of that Cleveland game, but we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt because of how he's played. But to me, Deontay Johnson is more of a number three receiver, where Bateman is by far and away your number two.
This is, the contract, honestly, given the price value, you could make the argument that you should be getting a number one for Bateman. And I couldn't make that argument for Davante Adams, say. And it's not because I don't think Davante Adams might be slightly better than Bateman at this point. I think it's actually very close, by the way. But it's not that I don't believe Davante Adams is better. You're projecting into the future for 2 years. You have huge surplus value relative to salary that's available. I mean, if you look at it on a surplus value relative to contract, it's a great deal the Ravens have right now. And they've got him in the right situation with the right quarterback. I wouldn't mess with it. And if they really insert Deontay Johnson for anything but a trivial portion of Bateman's snaps, like a mop-up portion, basically, I'd be very upset about this. Right now, he's the guy for this Ravens offense along with Flowers.
Yeah, and I think that, too, you know, you wanted to bring in a guy that was not going to compete with Rashad or Zay for snaps, but could be an upgrade over your other depth. And I think that, to me, Deontay is kind of perfect in that he can slot in as a number three, but you're not having the question about, well, is Rashad or Deontay your number two? It's pretty by far and away Rashad Bateman. And I think there were some questions, even though, you know, I mean, last year was a weird year, but there were all these questions back and forth about, well, who's the number two? Is it Odell? Is it Rashad? Like, who really is it? And I think the fact that Bateman doesn't have to look over his shoulder, he's secure in his contract, and he understands that, hey, this is where I'm going to be. I think that has all led to him having the year that he has had. Obviously the talent is one thing. There's no doubt about the talent, but all the other circumstances the Ravens have put him in this season have helped him flourish. And to me, I think that's a big reason why he's played so well.
Okay. We got one more question I do want to get to. It's from Spencer Peterson. First of all, Spencer has effectively a comment about taking away the option value with the fourth and one play. So completely agree with you, Spencer. We've discussed that on the show. I don't need to go into that further, but he also says, given how Henry has looked this year, how do you feel about the prospect of a 1 or 2 year offseason extension as part of the pathway to increasing available 2025 cap space? What do you think about that? He's relatively cheap next year. I think it's $7 million in cash they pay out the door, yeah, because he's got nine of it, but it's more in cap, obviously.
Right. Yeah. It's not like a bad deal. I just think, again, with running backs, you do have to be wary. But the thing with Derrick Henry is, you know, he put so much money into his body, as we've now learned. And, you know, he is, he'll be 31 by the time next season starts, right? I believe he'll be 31. So if you offer him effectively a 1-year extension that essentially turns his current 2-year contract into a 3-year contract that is actually a 2-year contract at the end of the day, because you're probably not, you're not actually having him on the roster during that last season, but it does open up more 2024 or 2025 cap. I'm not opposed to it. I mean, again, if Henry finishes the season strong, there are no clear signs of a slowdown. I mean, I think how you could approach it is kind of the Ravens, they had Mark Ingram on that 3-year deal that obviously turned into a 2-year deal, but he was so good his first year, obviously was not good that second season, but I thought that that risk was fine to take with him. I think it's a fine risk to take with Derrick Henry as well. On top of it, I think you can work Keaton Mitchell in more next season. I think that's an aspect you can use. Justice as well. So the thing that encourages me with Derrick Henry's situation right now is it's not what it was in Tennessee. You're not running him 25 to 30 times a game. You are able to keep him on a controlled enough snap slash carry basis to where you're not running him into the ground, which he was in his first 8 years in Tennessee. But I can see the other side of that argument where, okay, he was running to the ground his first 8 years. When is that going to catch up?
Yeah. He'll actually, on January 4th, he'll be 31.
Okay.
Now he is, you know, the thing that I've really come to appreciate about Derrick Henry, really since he got here more than anything else, is that he's kind of like Nolan Ryan, a 1-in-a-million outlier at the position. And you don't want to build your models using any part of Henry's career to project what a 30 or 31 year old running back looks like. That would be a huge mistake, because there really haven't been other good examples. But Nolan Ryan could still throw the ball in the high 90s in his mid 40s. And he was just that really extreme outlier case. And I would not be opposed to it. They'd have to structure it right. They'd have to basically convince Henry, I think, that this was a really good chance to win a Super Bowl here, which I think I can't imagine him. He looks happy as hell. I mean, just looks incredibly happy to be playing with Lamar Jackson. I can't imagine that there's a more entertaining place for him to play. And I don't know that money means everything to him at this point. He's made him a lot of money playing this game. If you could basically extend him for another year of the same AAV, I think he probably does it. The problem is the Ravens just have so many players to sign. They're going to have to start making some very tough choices about who they keep and who they don't, including some homegrown players who are institutions here. So it's going to be tough.
Yeah, for sure. And I think for me, you know, when you look at some of these decisions they have to make, obviously that starts with, you know, this offseason, a couple of guys extension eligible. And you also have guys who are upcoming free agents, such as a Brandon Stevens, who I know there are conversations about, has he actually gained or lost money this season? Because some of the metrics back him up, some don't. Some of the eye test metrics do, some don't. But it's guys like Hamilton and Linderbaum and Zay down the line, and obviously the other Zay and Isaiah Likely and so many other guys. So does that mean that you have to miss out on Derrick Henry and instead roll with a guy like Justice Hill, Keaton Mitchell, and maybe a higher level draft pick? Is that maybe what you do? I don't know. But if the money is good enough and it doesn't hinder them from improving the rest of their team, I wouldn't be opposed to that, especially if they can get out of it after next season.
Right. They've got two guys that are on the books for next year that they want to keep that are a lot of money. And in the last year, the deals are Owe and Humphrey. And those two, restructuring those two, will probably be a priority as well. I think they're going to want to extend Humphrey right now. I mean, Humphrey looks fantastic to me. He's looks like he'll make the move to safety at some point, and he'll be great there. I mean, the physicality is good. The finding the football is good. So I'm buying into him long term if I'm the Ravens right now. In the case of Owe, I think he's a perfectly good pass rusher. I think he really helps the Ravens. I think if you're going to get a more impactful pass rusher, I'm not saying there aren't some that are, but you typically have to go to the top of the first round to get those guys.
Yep.
So you're not going to get them with the kind of draft pick the Ravens have. And he's signed for $14 million and change next year. It'd be nice to spread that out over a few years and be able to cash in early on signing some of these other players who are coming to the end of year three, and you'd like to get some of that divisible benefit so that those players sign a team-friendly deal as opposed to waiting till the end and not being in any way incented to stay with the Baltimore Ravens. So anyway, where I am on that.
Definitely, 100%.
Kevin, always a pleasure to talk football with you. Thank you so much for taking a full 2 hours here and going through a difficult Browns game, but I thought a lot of interesting stuff. And I don't know, but we come out of these things somewhat positive. Obviously, we're talking about the offense, but just a cathartic component to watching film, isn't there?
Yeah, you know, just kind of identifying. I think when you watch the game live, there, to me at least, when I do it, there are so many, I focus in on like all of the negative stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, you need to get better here. I need to get better there. And then you focus in on the film and you're like, all right, well, you know, there are five guys that had a good rep on this play, but it resulted in a touchdown. And you obviously take the negative with it. But it's kind of, I don't know the word I'd use. I guess more of a relaxing feeling, especially after having the day to kind of decompress, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fair enough. Tell folks where they can find your podcast and other things you're working on.
Yeah, you can find me over at Locked On Ravens. So we do 5 days a week plus more daily Ravens coverage over there. So you can subscribe on YouTube as well as subscribe in audio form. It's the same show, both audio and video, so you're not missing out either which way. Find me over on Locked On Ravens written content. I do some work over at Bleacher Report and the Ryan Ripken Show as well. You can follow me over on Twitter and Instagram, social media in general, at KOstriker34.
All right, outstanding. For fans of this show, please hit like and subscribe if you would on your podcast app. Pass it along to anybody who would. You know how to initiate discussion about a film study short, so I won't mention that again other than to trigger it on the probably the 10 people out there who are good about consistently coming to me with new ideas on the thing, always looking to meet new people as well. Thanks very much. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe as well. Kevin, thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely, Ken. Always appreciate you having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and watch or tap. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.